Okay, our next case is number 18-1752, Dexcom, Inc. v. Waveform Technologies, Mr. Castanis.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honor, and may it please the Court. There's no question in this case that Rosenblatt discloses a background product that has platinum directly contacting a tantalum core. Everyone agrees on that. We do. Waveform does, and the board does. Rosenblatt
does it disclose it for use in electrical mechanical processes?
It discloses it for purposes of, we're talking right now about the background art that's disclosed in Rosenblatt and said to be unsatisfactory.
Well, it just says electroplating exists, right? But it doesn't say it exists for use in, for the purposes contemplated by the patent. Right.
For the purposes contemplated by Rosenblatt, yes, which is in the...
Is it your view that simply there are just such a limited number of options for perfecting this that in that 53 years in between Rosenblatt and the patent, that it would have been obvious that for anyone skilled in the art to come up with this solution?
Well,
these purposes?
For the purposes of the 202 and 433 patents, absolutely, because the in... vivo application of these sensors is very different than the harsh...
But you never argued below that the in-body, in vivo application is any less corrosive, did you?
Oh, no, quite on the contrary. In fact, we have agreement.
You didn't present any evidence to that fact.
No, in fact, there was no finding of the board to the contrary on that, which I think is the more important point, Judge O'Malley.
Because you didn't argue that...
No, we did argue it, and in fact, the other side... agrees with our proposition. In fact, if you look at, let me just make sure that I can tell you exactly where it is in their briefing before the board. Our friends at Waveform distinguished the very corrosive, very intense industrial environment from the in vivo application. That's at page A507 of the appendix. Yes, Judge Clevenger?
I just was a colloquy at 3287, Dr. Vachon's testimony, or I thought he was asked whether there was a difference between essentially the environment in Rosenblatt and the environment in Blood, and he said, no, it's the same.
He does say that, and that's why I pointed out that this was a point of dispute that the board didn't reach, so we have no board finding on this issue. What the board found, Judge Clevenger.
Well, the question of if you have this prior art in Rosenblatt that talks about electroplating but says it's unsatisfactory for my uses where I have a highly caustic environment.
Yes,
right? In Rosenblatt.
In fact, if you look at Rosenblatt.
Right, but I was reading Vachon to say, well, you know, he didn't see any difference between what was going on in the glucose sensor and, in essence, what was going on in Rosenblatt.
So what I think Dr. Vachon...
Is that what he's saying?
What I think Dr. Vachon...
Did you read? Do you have 32?
I have it right in front of me.
Okay.
And so you're referring to...
I'm referring to 3287, and it's on the lower right-hand corner, talking about industrial gas is caustic, right? Yes, it is. Well, it is caustic. Yes, it is. And they say, and then it's just pretty harsh. Yes, it is. And then they go on, is that... equivalent caustic to inside the body? Yes, is the answer.
And he says, for example, superoxide,
yeah,
absolutely.
Is your answer yes? The answer is yes. So if it is true that the environments are the same, then that art that you want to say is relevant is taught away from.
Well, again, Judge Clevenger.
This is your own expert.
This is our own expert.
Your own expert.
And if the argument is... If the argument that's being made against us is estoppel, then that argument should have been made against us.
It's not making estoppel or anything. It's in question of you're trying to put the garden variety art that's disclosed in Rosenblatt into play in the environment of your patent.
So let me step back here.
From caustic to caustic. So I don't understand why this isn't your expert didn't absolutely shoot your client in the foot.
So with regard to
why
what...
Why didn't he? Why isn't...
I'm hoping that I'm going
answer,
to be responsive
yeah,
to you.
Yeah, thank you.
So what I understand Dr. Vachon to be responding to here is the notion that these... is responding to the argument made by the other side that the two are not even in the same field of art because they're not combinable. And he's saying, no. There are similarities, absolutely. And in fact, he says that the environments are identical.
It doesn't matter what he's responding to if that response is relevant to what it teaches. I mean, the point is that, yes, you look at the entirety of the art, the entirety of the piece of art, and then you say, what does it teach? And while it refers to electroplating generally, it doesn't teach use of electroplating in these electrochemical processes.
So, Judge O'Malley, that brings up one of the problems that we have with the board's opinion here. And that is, what you've just described is a classic teaching away.
Not necessarily. I mean, you don't have to have a full-blown teaching away to say it just doesn't disclose it.
Well, but it does disclose it.
I mean, what we've got here is, as I understand it, conflict in the testimony because of the changing positions of the parties. That the patentee is saying Rosenblatt isn't relevant because it's dealing with a caustic environment, and your guy is saying it's the same kind of environment as in the human body. And so we've got a conflict here in the testimony, which is oddly reversed because of the change in the position of the parties. What are we supposed to do about that?
So I think the answer, Judge Dyke, is send it back. And the reason that we say send it back is that, as I was beginning to answer Judge O'Malley, what we have here is a case in Rosenblatt that's exactly like the CCPA's decision in In Re Bow, which is cited in our brief. Now, remember that in Rosenblatt
what's
says...
What's the reason to send it back?
Because we don't know what the board ruled on. We thought that it was a teaching away. They say, no, it's not teaching away. It's either a missing limitation...
Who's the they when you say...
They, my friends on the other side.
Well, what they say is irrelevant on that point. We have to read the board's opinion to decide what we think the board did. So how could the board have reached its conclusion? How could it... And the board was aware of what I'll call the garden variety teachings that were lying in Rosenblatt to be seen by all.
Mm-hmm.
The board heard testimony from your own expert that general art would not apply in this patent.
But that's not what the board held.
No. Okay. Well, I'm talking about whether there was an implied teach-away. And the board says that in these environments, it teaches away from using the conventional methods.
So in our opening brief...
If I decide that that's what I think the ALJ said, what is wrong with that analysis?
It's a substantial evidence review.
It is, absolutely, because teaching away is a question of fact. So first of all, I would say that under the APA and under this court's decisions, the board is obligated to give you a clear...
Isn't there substantial evidence to support implied teaching away when Dexcom's own expert gave the rationale to the judge?
We are in administrative law world here, Your Honor, and that means that the board has to make explicit...
Where does the board treat this issue?
The board treats this issue at a couple of places in its opinion, but most notably, I think it's at appendix, and we'll just use the first of the decisions here. We can see at the bottom of 23, we determine that petitioner has not shown by a preponderance of the evidence that the combination of Wilson and Rosenblatt teaches or suggests the in contact with limitation of claim one of the 202 patent.
Right.
And you'll find that
the
repeated.
The question they have to be answering is whether it teaches it for purposes of the uses in this patent. And they had plenty of evidence. I mean, yes, we're in an APA world, but we also have lots of case law that says no magic words are needed if we can reasonably discern the path by which the board reached its conclusion.
I'm not sure that, I don't think, in fact, I'll say it more positively, I don't think you can discern that here. This was not a teaching away holding, and it wasn't a teaching away holding for the
reasons.
But
do they have to have a teaching away holding to say it just doesn't disclose it?
I think on this record they absolutely had to, because they first of all said it does disclose it. What they said is that it discloses it but says it's unsatisfactory. And that brings me back to In Re Bow and also this court's decision in In Re Zhang and others. Let me read to you the language from In Re Bow. Is this all of the disclosures in a reference must be evaluated for what they fairly teach one of ordinary skill in the art, And that includes where the teachings are, and I quote from Bo again here, phrased in terms of a non-preferred embodiment or as being unsatisfactory for the intended purpose. So Bo itself says that you need to read Rosenblatt for all that it teaches, which is even those things that were said to be unsatisfactory.
The board at Appendix 30 rejects the what I call the garden variety art from Rosenblatt as being unsatisfactory. And that's the piece of the opinion, the paragraph that starts next.
Yes, but that's the next they're part not, is about the second.
What?
I'm sorry, the next part is about the... it says it relies not only on Rosenblatt's bonding technique, which is what's claimed in
that's
Rosenblatt.
Right. It's
exactly addresses the
board
point.
Clearly
you're
recognizes that Rosenblatt, you know, teaches its own method as well as teaching unsatisfactory prior art techniques.
And it says
and
it,
they,
in the context
they,
of
and they recognize that your own expert has said that those techniques are unsatisfactory for the claim here.
And that very well may be, and on remand, we might have to have the board address that.
And you get a, why do you deserve a remand?
Why do I deserve a remand? Because you can't tell what the board did. We're fighting here right now as to whether there was even a teaching way holding. We don't agree on that. They say that the board made no motivation to combine the two.
Sir, the we in this argument is you and the court, not them.
I understand that, but I think that what my opponent is saying in this case about what the board actually held is a strong indicator that reasonable people can disagree as to what this board held in this case. And in this case, the board did
That's
not read...
That's a new standard in this court.
I don't think it's a new standard at all.
You find reasonableness based on the differing opinions of litigants.
No, but I think it does point up in the context of this record, Judge Clevenger, and I don't mean to be cute about it, that there is not a clear holding of a teaching away. There is definitely not a clear holding, as my friends say, of a lack of motivation to combine. But even if you disagree with us with regard to that, there is this other issue, and that has to do with the notion that there was a clear disclaimer of a multi-layer embodiment.
Well, this really does go to a waiver question. I mean, didn't the board invite you to address disclaimer and you didn't do it?
No, we absolutely did. If you look at pages 647 to 649 of the appendix, we responded directly to that invitation and argued that the claim scope, including whatever disclaimer there might be, does not exclude a tantalum platinum alloy on the outside surface of the core, and indeed does not exclude a multi-layered core at all. Now, the board actually addressed those arguments, which I think is proof positive that we didn't waive them.
And in what context did you make that argument?
It's in the context of responding to the institution decision. You'll see at 647, it starts with Waveform's argument that the structurally flexible core cannot be multi-layered. That's exactly the clear disclaimer argument. And if I could, Judge O'Malley, let me just point to you very quickly as my time runs out, where in the prosecution history, where the board made its error in this regard. The language of the prosecution history was that McCurr provides an electrochemically active layer. This can be found, by the way, at Appendix 479 or at 277 to 78, the institution decision. McCurr provides an electrochemically active layer 3233 that is not in contact with the core. McCurr uses an intervening insulating layer 14. Now, what did the board do? After it quoted that language, it then applied a disclaimer of intervening layers. Not intervening insulating layers, but any intervening layers. So then it was able to create...
I'm still having a hard time. I'm looking at all the pages that you keep citing, and I don't see any reference to disclaimer in those pages.
The disclaimer is being offered, Your Honor, in the context of claim construction. And whether we use the term disclaimer or not, the fact is that the 647 to 649 argument is directly responsive to the argument.
One of your primary arguments here on appeal is that the board misunderstood disclaimer, but the board asked you to address the meaning of disclaimer, and the purpose of the prosecution history, and you didn't do it.
No, but we... But
how are we supposed to say, oh, you can do it now for the first time before us?
But we're not doing it for the first time now. I've given you
the pages. You gave me pages, and I see no reference to the word disclaimer at all, or to prosecution history. So I don't even understand how you can say that that's where you addressed squarely what the board invited you to address.
It is responsive, Judge O'Malley, to Waveform's argument in their response at pages 44 to 45, which is based on the disclaimer argument. And the disclaimer argument here has been that the structurally flexible core cannot be multi-layered. That is what we addressed. And if we didn't use the word disclaimer, I don't think that constitutes a waiver when the argument is there in substance. I'm sorry, I'm into almost all of my rebuttal time.
We'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Mr. Eade.
Good morning. Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court.
Can we address that last point? Do you think that by addressing head-on your position with respect to, the multi-layer function or the fact that it couldn't be multi-layered, did really, even if indirectly, address your disclaimer point?
Absolutely not. Dexcom in no way at any point below addressed the disclaimer argument that the board specifically asked both parties to address.
But wouldn't it be enough to just say, well, we addressed the substance of the point that they're relying on disclaimer for?
Possibly, if that were correct, but they didn't even do that. They didn't discuss the scope of the McCour disclaimer. In fact, I think, in connection with the in contact with limitation, the word McCour never shows up anywhere in the record. They made an independent argument comparing Claim 7 of the 433 patent to Rosenblatt, but that argument did not depend upon the McCour disclaimer, and there's no evidence anywhere in the record that that argument was connected to or that it implied anything about the McCour disclaimer.
Well, let me ask you about this Rosenblatt prior art reference, because on the face of Rosenblatt at 1033, it talks about this being unsatisfactory in this particular environment, in this electrochemical process. And there seems to be a dispute as to whether that environment that was involved in Rosenblatt is similar to the environment that we're dealing with here, and there seems to be somewhat conflicting testimony as to whether the two environments are the same. And I don't see in the board decision that it really addresses that question of whether the two environments are comparable. It just says that Rosenblatt teaches it's unsatisfactory. Is that a problem, that we don't have a specific finding on the environments question, as it were?
I don't think so, Your Honor. First, the appellant, Dexcom, never once during the IPR proceeding raised the argument that conditions in the body are milder than the Rosenblatt conditions. They didn't make that argument. Waveform made some arguments, but Dexcom's ability to argue that point by virtue of the fact it didn't make it is waived. Second, as you pointed out in his deposition testimony, Dexcom's expert, Dr. Vachon, directly contradicted Dexcom's position.
Your pleading said the opposite. We've got differing positions on this, surprisingly, from the parties. Where you said that the environments are different, they said the environments are the same.
Well, Your Honor, I think you correctly summarized the sequence of events here. Below, there were arguments about non-analogous prior art that were not adopted by the board. Dexcom was opposing those arguments concerning non-analogous prior art. Perhaps as a result, Dexcom never once argued that the conditions in the body are milder. In fact, the only evidence Dexcom put in the record on this point was when Dr. Vachon was questioned in deposition, and he denied that the conditions in the body are milder.
Okay, well, let me ask you another question here, and that relates to the board's refusal to consider these other prior art references, including Carter, because they weren't properly raised in the petition. And we have Genzyme and we have Ariosa. And it seems to me that there's an argument that the board's ruling here in dismissing the relevance or ability to consider those in the reply is contrary to those cases.
Your Honor, so to be clear about Waveform's position, it's not the position stated by Dexcom's counsel. We think it's clear and literal in the board's ruling that it found that the combination of Rosenblatt and Wilson did not teach the in contact with limitation. That is, neither reference taught it, either separately or together. They don't teach it.
You're not talking about the same thing I'm talking about.
I'm next getting to it. Okay. So, Genzyme
The board said the APA precludes us from considering Carter and these other references because they weren't properly raised in the petition. It's not sufficient that they were raised in the reply. That, on its face, seems questionable in the light of Genzyme and Ariosa.
Yes, Your Honor. So, there is a decision here. Was Dexcom trying to change its prima facie case? Was it using these references to supply a missing element in the claims, which we believe was missing? The in contact with element was missing from both Wilson and Rosenblatt. So the law is clear that Dexcom cannot, in a reply, make changes to the prior art it's citing in order to fill that gap in its prima facie case. We believe that's the case. In fact,
those cases say that you can't use them to fill a gap, but you can use them to inform what the knowledge of someone skilled in the art was at the time and to interpret the Rosenblatt disclosure.
Yes, right? Your Honor. What you can't do, though, is take a Carter or a Beer or a Haley and use that to interpret Rosenblatt in a way that completely changes what Rosenblatt teaches. In other words, Rosenblatt teaches that an alloy layer is essential to holding these two elements together. What they would do with this state-of-the-art argument is use one of these references and say, no, Rosenblatt doesn't teach you have to have an alloy. They eliminate that requirement from Rosenblatt. So you can't use Genzyme or the other case under a state-of-the-art theory to dramatically alter what the prior art teaches.
In those cases, in Ariosa, the reference to the generalized prior art appeared in the petition, correct? It wasn't raised for the first time
that's
in the
correct.
Reply brief.
That's not correct.
Those cases do involve things that were raised for the first time in the reply, and they say they specifically hold that it's appropriate.
Again, Your Honor, I think that the decision point here is, are these references being used to fill a gap?
Is it not correct that those cases involve things that were raised for the first time in the reply, and the argument was that they were not properly raised at that point because it was too late?
I think that's right, Your Honor. But when it's used...
Those references were being used to bring in background art.
That's right.
And that was clear from when they were presented initially, right?
Right.
And so the argument in Ariosa and the other cases, well, you can't exclude that. It's not being offered to fill a hole in the prima facie case.
That's correct.
So if you look at how this art was being offered, it's at pages 118 through 120 in the record, which was in the petition for review. It sets up Carter, for example, and goes down the list. It looked to me like that was not being offered for background art, but was being offered in part of the 103 analysis.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, isn't that on the decision tree, the question we have to decide? Because if this art was being offered by way of background, there seems to be strong precedent that it can't be excluded just because it was only brought up on reply.
And yes, and if it's offered by way of background, it can't be used to alter or change or rewrite Rosenblatt's teaching, which is that an alloy layer is necessary. What Dexcom said when it came in reply.
Well, that's an argument you would make if we decided that it was error to exclude it and it's got to go back for background art. And you're going to say background art is here and filling gaps in 103 analysis over here, you can do the former and not do the latter. That would be your argument. But isn't the question for us whether or not pages 118 through 121, 22 that cites Beer, Haley, Carter, what for what purpose was it being offered?
In the reply.
In the reply? Okay. In the reply, we believe that these were being offered to fill a gap in the prima facie case.
But they didn't say that, right?
They said that they offered these references in the event there's any difficulty in Rosenblatt's teaching of the in contact with limitation. If there's any difficulty in Rosenblatt teaching platinum in direct contact with tantalum.
Are you able to identify the pages where in
yes.
the reply where this was argued?
Yes, Your Honor. APPX 633. 633. So
it's 633. Oh, Haley Carter. Okay.
Dexcom says, to the extent there were any difficulties applying platinum to tantalum in 1950, the petition proved how these complexities were solved over the next 53 years. And so...
What page is that?
I'm sorry, that is APPX 633.
633.
And it begins to the extent.
Yeah, but that's, so they seem to be saying that these references tell you how the prior art was understood at the time, the relevant time here, right?
But all those references post-date Rosenblatt, right?
They all post-date Rosenblatt.
So it's not how Rosenblatt would have been understood at the time, but how what happened after Rosenblatt.
That's true, Your Honor. And I believe the best way to read this is that in its reply, Dexcom was anticipating, based on the patent owner response, that it had difficulty with Rosenblatt. Dexcom didn't mention the problem about the alloy layer in its petitions. When we filed our patent owner response, we made the problem with the alloy layer very evident. Now Dexcom's coming back in reply and saying, well, if Rosenblatt is deficient, we have these other references.
What they're saying is if Rosenblatt said this was unsatisfactory in the years intervening after Rosenblatt, it was found to be satisfactory, is basically what they're saying, right?
Yes, and in so saying, they are attempting to change the fundamental teaching in Rosenblatt and thereby offer a new prior art reference to meet its prima facie case.
Well, I guess that's the question as to whether this is a new reference to meet the prima facie case or it's just a new reference to explain what someone skilled in the art would have understood later. I mean, it's not a clear line.
Is that a fact question or a legal question? Because the board in its decision exactly said that's the question. And they said we view this to be offered not as background but for a prima facie case.
My understanding, Your Honor, is that that is a fact question that would be reviewed for substantial evidence.
Okay. Anything else?
Do Your Honors have other issues that were raised by Dexcom that you'd like me to address?
I guess not.
Thank you.
Mr. Daniels, you've got 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, Judge Dyke, with regard to Rosenblatt, that wasn't an attempt to change Rosenblatt's meaning at all. Teaching away, which was what we were addressing here, has to be evaluated as of the time of the invention, not as of the time of the prior art reference. That was one of the fundamental errors that we assigned in this case with regard to understanding the board's decision as a teaching away decision. Yes, perhaps in 1950, Rosenblatt might have thought that in an environment caustic environment, this would have been inappropriate. But by the time of all of the prior art references that were cited, both four of which were cited in our petition, so they can't claim lack of notice. They were all being done for background, for purpose, just as in Genzyme, just as in Ariosa.
Why didn't you rely on any of those prior art references as to fill the gaps that existed to the extent Rosenblatt would have been viewed as teaching away?
Well, I think once the petition was granted on Rosenblatt, we reasonably, of course, proceeded with that combination.
Why didn't you include other combinations in the petition?
I can't subjectively go back into the minds of the lawyers at that time, but I can only assume, based on the clarity of Rosenblatt, that the fact that Rosenblatt is going so far as to say platinum coated on tantalum is so old that we're going to distinguish it away and tell you why it doesn't work in these caustic environments. But in any event, we know that Genzyme and Ariosa allow us to do what we did here, and that is to provide background. And we were explaining how Rosenblatt would be understood to a person of ordinary skill in the art as of 2003. Finally, Judge O'Malley.
There's a question of whether or not you're providing background or filling a gap, a fact question or a legal question?
I think ultimately it's a legal question, Judge Clevenger, but even if it were treated as a fact question, we wouldn't have to shrink from it here, because if you look at exactly the page that my friend read to you from page 633, I think, from the appendix, you don't see us trying to fill a gap, and it would be silly if we were trying to fill a gap there, because we were relying on most of the same references that we'd already put in our petition in the first place. So we never viewed it as a gap that needed to be filled in the first place. If I could conclude very quickly, Judge O'Malley, with regard to our colloquy during my opening argument about waiver, I'd like to just point you to the board's decision at page 13 of the appendix. The board certainly didn't view us as having waived our opportunity to respond on this issue. They actually say that we assert that the patent owner's construction for in contact with does not preclude an intervening layer. And that is where the board then addresses McCure. If I could just conclude on one thought.
I think we're out of time.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor.
And thank all counsel for the case.